Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. By FreshBooks, the ridiculously easy-to-use cloud accounting software used by over 10 million small business owners. Try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 304, June 14, 2017. George explains how a 12AX7 works. Good evening, everybody. From Pleasant Hope, Missouri, I'm K9EID, and we're here to have fun and ham radio again. Ham Nation is on the air, and I'm joined with all of my compatriarchs plus many others, but let's see. Gordo, you're here from California. How are you?
All is well. We have a heat spell out here, so we're going to jump into the ocean as soon as we're over.
I hear you. Well, if 6 meters is open, you might be delayed a little bit. And how are you doing, Don? Everything okay there?
Yeah, we're doing great. It's a little warm here in the shack. We're having some AC issues, so we're at 91 degrees, but that's okay. I've got no problems at all. We want to say hello to our friend Ted Randall, WB8PUM, the man behind WTWW. Of course, we're on 5085 on the 100,000 watt and 12.105 going into Africa tonight. He is in the hospital, had some cardiac issues, got a couple of blockages. He's going to have a couple of stents put in. But I want to show you something here. I'm going to have to show it to you on the phone. But he texted me a picture, and it says, "Crash cart, shortwave and ham radio, cardiac crash cart, trying to find some upbeat tunes. I'm going to track a Jerry and the Pacemakers CD." He was actually on the air on WTWW from Vanderbilt in the ICU.
Oh, wow.
If you can believe that. That man is officially crazy. They ought to just put him on the nut floor because he's crazy. The man's insane. But we love him. And Ted, we wish you all the best. So there he is, tracking WTWW from the ICU at Vanderbilt Hospital in Nashville. So, Ted, we're thinking about you and praying for you, and we love you, and we want you to get out of there real fast and get back on WTWW. Bob?
I want to know how he got all that stuff in that room. That's just not right. How did you do that?
I don't know. It's his laptop. Looks like his laptop and a PR-40 and probably an interface, and that's all it is. But the rest of it's done. You know, it's not like the old days. But
Matt, that's great. George, how are you doing down there in the wonderful land of Mississippi? Wait a minute, are you on the set of Hee Haw? Where are you,
Bob? It is hot in the shack here too, but at least we got plenty of eggs. we're going to talk a little bit tonight about the preamp you're working on the Pine Board project there. It really has been hot here, though, and I've had tower crews out doing work, repairing leaks and one thing or another. But, I'm going to do this live tonight. I didn't have time to make a video, but I think we'll stumble through it. And if y'all see anything not just right, let me know, and we'll cover it or not, you know, as we go along.
Or not. That's right. Okay, yeah, we look forward to that. That was great what you did about the power supply and all the good things about the vacuum tube, but now we get to learn about the preamp. So we'll be back. Gordo, we're going to come down there and let you tell us more about some CW plus lots of other things. So here we go to California.
Roger that. Gordo, the wild card. Hey, my log keeping was done by hand, much like Bob and George's wild card log keeping. So if you don't mind yourself of having worked me on the official Valerie and Amanda log, not to worry. Just send me a QSL saying, Gordo, you missed me, and we will get you in the log, and I'll make sure it goes confirmed to Valerie as well. This Saturday, Milwaukee Radio Amateur Club, 100th anniversary. And they're going to be holding that at the house of Harley Davidson, the motorcycle folks. Dave, WB9BWP, says, listen for W9 Romeo Hotel slant 100 because it is their 100th anniversary. Milwaukee Radio Amateurs Club. Congratulations. And again, listen for W9 Romeo Hotel slant 100. Dave, great job, WB9BWP. Nevada, you've got all of June, says the Governor Sandoval, for Amateur Radio Month. So, Nevada, you did it. Everybody now knows it. And for CW, that's the C, that's the W, Charlie, Alpha Delta 5, Echo November, says QSO Sender, and the number 3, that's an Android app that he developed just for our Ham Nation and others to take part in learning CW. So if you get a chance, check out Charlie 85 Echo November at QSO Sender 3. And we're going to send two characters today, the letter A and the letter N. They're just opposites, A and N. Back in the old days of Consulan navigation out on the water, you would go to one side or the other side of your true course, and you would hear the A or the N. All right, Brian, let's go ahead and jump right into some short shots. And what we're going to do is show you the other side of Dayton that you've not seen. Well, not quite Dayton, but the Greene County Fairgrounds. They had an absolute pristine facility. Look at those big buildings. That's the letter A. And they also had some good-looking tents before the weather closed in. ICOM America had their good emergency communications van. That's letter N. And talk about a swap meet area. This is what it looked like. And this is not just, you know, go find yourself out at the swap meet. That's letter A. They actually had each and every spot with little flags on it, and had it well-marked. Let me tell you, the Hamvention folks really went all out, the letter A, to take good care of the swap meet folks, including the signs they couldn't take down, no parking on grass. Oh, yeah, it was fine. Well, until the rain came. There's the letter A again. And it was fun sharing this huge, huge racetrack, and there was still a little bit of horsing around going on, as you can see here. And that just the charm of the fairgrounds. That's letter N. And there again, as you can see, the green grass was hard packed before the water came in. And everybody, letter A, had their little swap meet area. And even had signs, so you really couldn't get lost if you found a goodie and you couldn't find out where it was. So the swap meet at Hamvention 2 years ago was great. And let me tell you, they had great signage. Well, it was great signage going up, but once a little bit of wind came, letter A, and that's Ron. Ron's been with the Hamvention since day one. Ron, I don't know how many years, W8ILC, but Ron is been chairman of the Hamvention for years and years. And he was right there at the very first one at the Biltmore, or even maybe before that. But Ron called to our attention, guys, we need a little help on the forum sign. A portion of it blew off. Well, everybody got a big laugh at that. And, you know, this is a ham fest. Weather and sign problems help. And inside exhibits, Dayton Hamvention, let me tell you, in the buildings and in the tents, they went all out to try and accommodate everybody. And we especially, that was letter A, we especially like every building, every hall, every forum area was well listed as to who was where. And you couldn't help but miss any of these huge signs. And again, the blue vested volunteers, that's letter N, really did a great job. Yeah, the men's head was absolutely spectacular, and it was clean the entire time. The ladies, well, I can't tell you because I couldn't get in there. So we'll just have to assume, it was good. Well, one thing we can't control, and it would have happened both at the old Hera Arena as it did right here at the fairgrounds, and that is weather. And the tent did not blow away, but I tell you, the water was just coming down in sheets on that setup day on Thursday. And inside the tent area, there was a little bit of water flow, but you know, hams are tough. This is not a problem. They even took out their flashlights, like you see the fellow on the left, even though they did have light when it started to pour. You need a little light. Now, George, we found this. We were going to try and get it home. Don said he couldn't quite get it in his car, but just a little bit of the good old video days out at the swap meet. And I thought you would appreciate that. Food, let me tell you, unlike Hera Arena, there was food everywhere with food trucks, and these were gourmet. I mean, they were grilling and you name it. And their VE testing, not only would they graduate folks through testing, they gave them a very nice computer-generated certificate of recognition for passing the test. And about 4 hours later, 4 hours later, they were getting call signs for those brand new hams. Kids, there were kids everywhere, and there were projects for kids. These kids were just showing off some of the very latest that they put together. American Radio Relay League had a wonderful exhibit of many, many different booths and personnel, including an area just for kids. And they are our future. Oh, there's Donnie Arnold, W6GPS. He's got his hotspot, and he was squawking and walking on D-Star all over the facility. Yeah, he loves that kind of D-Star stuff. And, yep, you could bring third-party traffic as well, but they needed a little bit of shut-eye. Letter A. And the inside exhibits, let me tell you, big screens, a lot of activity. It was really quite an event. And ICOM America had a huge booth. They actually had a couple, and they were always taking good care of the folks. There we are. This was our big Ham Nation get-together. Afterwards, we all went over to the American Radio Relay League area where they gave us a big congratulations on 300. And as you can see, it was a packed room. And they had folks come in from about, I think, 75 different countries, all the way from India as well. This very nice-looking lady was one, brought her parents, and she's quite the DXer. And I'll give you her call sign next week when I look at the QSL. So, Brian, back here. As we're getting ready for this weekend, again, the Milwaukee Radio Amateur Club having their 100th on the air. And this weekend, I want to see all of you phoning up on code A-N. And be sure and read the QST magazine on your rules. And you can go to the ARRL site, arrl.org/fieldday, or just type in field day. And we hope all of you will get into field day and get on the air, or take part in your local field day and help folks set up antennas. Or if you're a great cook and you don't want to grab a microphone, grab pots and pans and make field day happen. Well, we're getting our radio right here, the big ICOM IC9100 for third-party traffic and go-to station. It'll be on the air. We're getting it all lubed up, ready to roll. Let's take a look and see some of the great radios that ICOM America has for your consideration. It's ICOM time.
Calling all stations.
Make sure you grab your ICOM gear for the most popular on-air event, Field Day, June 24th and 25th. Let ICOM help you make the most contacts or practice for emergency situations. Don't forget to bring along the perfect field day companion, the IC7300. Ideal for the ham on the go, it's a high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design. RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, SD memory card slot, and more. Hear and see a wide variety of signals with the R8600, ICOM's new high-performance software-defined receiver. An industry first for desktop wideband receivers, the R8600 provides a high-resolution, real-time spectrum scope with a waterfall, 4.3-inch high-resolution color display with touchscreen features, SD card slot for receive log, decode log, and voice recording, and it scans up to 100 channels per second in memory scan mode. The ICOM America Hams to Japan sweepstakes is underway. Enter today for a chance to win an ICOM radio or even an unforgettable experience to attend the 2017 Tokyo Ham Fair. Make sure you come back and enter each week to be eligible for each radio drawing, and visit icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on this and all the ICOM radios. And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation, register to win some great swag prizes like t-shirts and hats. While you're there, learn how you could win in the monthly grand prize drawing. And for this month, we've got a new radio. It's the ICOM IC718 HF transceiver. Superior basic performance, DSP noise reduction, and DSP automatic notch filter included. And it's very simple to operate. It's a great entry-level HF rig. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up and good luck. Don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. Bob, I understand that we've got some big news tonight on the Pine Board front.
We have a lot of good news. I don't even know where to start. But probably the first thing I should tell you is that we have the official word this week from the AES people. Now, we're not talking about the old ham radio store in Milwaukee, talking about Antique Electronic Supply. They are putting together the package of parts for each of the modules for the Pine Board project, and it will be in their catalog.
Wow.
So the deal there is, you know, this all started, about 2 or 3 years ago, when I'd get on a thing we called the Peanut Whistle Net every Monday morning on 3885. And I've talked to you before about my mentor in this whole thing is Richard, W0BVT. He'd come on the Pine Board thing. The deal was you had to run low power. We're talking QRP 5 watts. We all cranked down our transmitters. Not him. He came on with these Pine Board things, and I was just incredibly fascinated. So I've been to his home several times. He lives over south of Columbia, Missouri, and we have become really good friends, and he's my mentor in this. And I told him the other day, I said, you're going to become famous now because he's in the Antique Electronic Supply Catalog. It'll be there in a while. They're getting all the parts numbers together. It's just amazing. You'll just be able to make one click and boom, you'll get the preamp or you'll get the power supply or you'll get the even the field strength meter, so on. And we're very excited about that. But that's number one. Number two is all of this stuff I'm getting in here. This is just beyond my comprehension. I never thought that this was going to grow to what it has been. And now it's starting to become international because I'm getting all kinds of emails from people in Europe and South America. These guys are going as crazy as we are. But then I really love this kind of stuff. I'm getting pictures. Now, you know where that picture came from? That came from Chip. Do you remember Chip? Remember this guy? Well, Chip, K9MIT, sent me his crystals, and he's ready to go. He told me, I got that first thing. That's great. Then I'm going to run through a couple of others. These are just really wonderful. This is from Jim. Jim has sent me several pictures of his project, and he has done a beautiful job. K9JWP. Look at some of the work he's done on this stuff. Just beautiful. Makes me look like a real piker. But where do you see this? Now, I'm only showing you this for one reason. You're probably going to say, well, okay, the power supply. Yeah, but I want you, let me see if I can get this a little better. It's kind of dark and hard to see, but look what Jim did. He did a large-scale copy of Gene's wonderful drawing, and he's put it up on the wall in front of him as he built. That's the way to do it. And congratulations to you, Jim, and thanks for those pictures. He sent a whole bunch of others, but I just thought that was something else that we could share with you. That's Jim. He said he took the wax string challenge. And speaking of wax string, I got my wax string today, a couple of days ago. What am I talking about? On eBay, from eBay. See, it's there. So you guys and gals that don't think that's still around. Oh, yes, it is. So check it out. Wax string is available. Now comes the biggie. I've been toying with this for some time. And I've been playing with it for more than just some time. So I finally sat down with the preamp the other day, Sunday, and I spent 8 hours. I'm going to lick this or else. Because I could never get this to work the way I wanted it to. And what we're talking about, this works great. This preamp is wonderful. I've had a couple of people ask me, could they use that for a mic preamp to drive amplifier? Yeah, beautiful. However, I always am telling you about equalization. And on AM, it's really important. Because a lot of times, the AM signals are kind of down in the mud, and they need that extra articulation. So what I did after 8 hours is I played around. I copied. In 1975, 76, had a product on the market that a lot of artists use. Bachman Turner Overdrive, Randy Burke Bachman, of course, Joe Frampton. I built a single space, 1¾-inch preamp, and that's it right there. Basically, that's it. It's a great preamp. But then I added equalization to it. And by adding only 5 parts, you can have equalization. And there it is. There's the original. Right here where that 02 capacitor was, you change that to an 01. Drop in the 50K pot and the 10K pot. Take that over to the bypass down this side of the B plus line, the 100K. Bingo. You've got bass and treble controls. So I recommend, if you have built the preamp, go ahead and do that. There's only a few parts. So make that happen. And get this up here. Just in case somebody wanted to add it. There you go. There's the parts that you'll need to add. And that was just the preamplifier. Here is a complete list that that Gene did, and this is what Antique Electronic Supply has formulated for their preamp that they're going to put the kit. These are the parts that they will have in the kit. Before we're going to release it, I have to sit down this weekend and write you a little bit of instructions. So I was happy that that's all happening. It's kind of cool, I have to tell you. But the main thing is that you have a lot of different ways you can go with all of this. And you also note that I don't say much about the amplifier yet. But I have been working with Richard, W0BVT. He's building things alongside, and I come up with like the preamp and all this and the EQ, and he does it to make sure that it works for him and so on and so on. Well, we both have been working on the amplifier. I have an amplifier working with a 12AU7. But if we did one thing and add a 6V6 and a 6AG7 together and don't do the 12AU7, oh, man. So that is what we're going to do. I'm not going to talk to you much about it yet because we have one part that's very important, and that is the final coil. And we've got three ways to go. Gene came up with a wonderful way to do this, and I really thought that was cool. Gene went to Lowe's and bought this. It's a little cable. There we go. It's a little plastic thing that you can route wires through to manage cables. But you can also get a 2-inch piece of PVC and wrap this around and make your own coil. So that's number one. Number two is we can use we can use what Richard's done, and that's actually wind a coil. Or I found this from good old MFJ. They've got the coil stock, and Richard's working on, we only need about this much of it. And we're working on how many turns and what to do, but we want to make this simple. Very simple, but yet there might be a learning curve that some of you might want to do. So we've been working on all of that to make sure that it's not going to be too difficult. So here's what I'm going to do. I hope I can do this okay. I'm going to bring up the whole working shebang. I've even had it on the air this week. As I said, I'm not going to talk to you much about the final. I don't want you to get ahead because we're still making changes to this thing. And I can't call it changes as much as I call it additions to really make it the best we can do for these few little parts. So that's where we are with this. So here we go. We're going to expose the new preamp, and I'm very proud of this. This thing is great. It works so well, and I'm really happy. Mic gain, the treble control, and the bass control, and it's one 12AX7, just what we had going on, you know, before. Power supply. Only change I made there is I moved the switch around a little bit. I figured since I'm going to do kind of a front panel thing, I did that. So we have all that going, and it really works well. But we'll start centering on the preamp, make sure everybody's got that together. And it works really good. And with just a little bit, let's see if we can. I don't know if this is going to work well. I probably should hold up till next week. I want you to hear that preamplifier, how well it works. I need to get my speaker over here closer, but I have to rearrange a bunch of things to do that. So we'll see what happens. Maybe at the end of the show, I can do a little quick little dive on it for you. But that's what I did, and I'm really happy about it. It took me 8 hours of playing around with all of the things, but we got it. Also, this is up on the website, heilsound.com. Go to the bottom of the ham radio page, and you'll see a whole section of the Pine Board project. Brian has been so wonderful in taking just the clips of the little 10 and 15 minute segments, so you don't have to run through all the programs, and you'll be able to go to our website and see all of that stuff. And lots of comments from you. I appreciate that, good or bad. And we try to help you. Some have questions. So there's kind of a little forum going there. Also, there are pictures of all. I have a picture up of the new preamp and the schematic and the parts list and all that. Gene got those things together and Michelle put those up just today. So that's all up and running. Yes, I know. I changed my mind in the middle of the stream. Why? Because I'm a spearminter. I just thought we better do this a little better. And with only five parts, you know, it'd be different if we had to do a whole bunch of rebuild. No, you don't. It's real simple. All I did was add that little front panel on there, the piece of very thin piece of wood. And where did I get the wood? Ha ha. Hobby Lobby. And Virginia, who's in the chat room, she met us at Dayton. Virginia sent me some great pictures. And she have gone out to, she went to Hamcom and she bought parts. She went shopping. And I'm so proud of her. She even found a 100 millimeter for her field strength meter. I don't know how she found that. That's a toughie. But anyway, this is the kind of thing that I'm getting back of all you good folks that are building and have questions. And then you get people like Virginia's out scounging. You want to go to your local ham fest and look around. You might find stuff like this. You might find all kinds of other little gadgets and do what Virginia's doing. She's just collecting them, and she's ready to go. But I really appreciate all that that's going on here, and especially the fact that Ham Nation is going to be a part of that AES catalog. That's pretty intense. So we appreciate everything that everybody's doing. My gosh. And it's gone way beyond what I thought it would, and I'm so happy. But I'm happy for us, for the hams. This is, you know, it's not anything that anybody's selling. Well, AES is, but we're just sharing our wonderful hobby of amateur radio. And I've told you before, I've been a builder all my 60 plus years, and I'm still doing it. So I want to share it with you. And I'm getting some wonderful responses from people. I get letters from all over, as I said. And these are marvelous things that here's just a couple in closing. Let's see. This came from KY5U. I wonder how many of these will show up on Southern AM nets on low power night. Bob, would be good to have a net just of the pine board rigs at some point. I've had that many times now, people suggesting we have our own pine board Ham Nation net. Is that cool? Build one and join them. Of course, this is why they leave serious thoughts to adults. Well, here's one from N5DMC. I agree 110% with KY5U idea of having our own net. A net we're listening would be a big deal. You got that. And so on and so on and so on. So send me your comments. Some of those came off of the comments on the Pine Board page on the bottom of Heil Sound. So that's what I have for now. And we'll be back. I'll have some more pictures. I got some stuff from Virginia. And there's lots of other things. And we'll get a little further into that preamp. But for now, we're going to let Don tell us about some books, and then George is going to tell us how that 12AX7 works. And I'm telling you, you got to know what's inside that little tube. All right. Take it away, Don.
Such a cute, dinky little tube, but do you have a purple dinky stapler? You've got purple chicken heads, but nope. I bet you don't have a purple dinky stapler. Look at this. I was going through my W5H Ham Nation 300 QSL cards today, and I laid them all out. And look what's on top of the pile. There's our friend Virginia. See if you can see this here. She sent a picture of me and her and Tyler as Hammy, along with her really beautiful original artwork on her QSL card. Virginia's just the best. I think I talked to her twice for Ham Nation 300. Virginia's very cool. She's a an awesome lady and a great friend of the show. Let's talk about something called FreshBooks. If you have to invoice people, you need FreshBooks. The process of billing clients is painful. It's time-consuming. But It doesn't have to be. Stop chasing your clients. Save time. Know where your business stands with FreshBooks. FreshBooks is an all-new version of their cloud accounting software will make running your business easy, fast, and secure. They have improved the platform. It was developed by a small team of 10 using design thinking and lean UX processes. I don't know what that means, but they do, and it means it's going to be good for you if you do invoicing. The FreshBooks dashboard gives you a quick access to your spending, outstanding balances, total profit, accounting reports like sales tax summary and profit loss. FreshBooks makes it fast and easy to create and send professional-looking invoices. I do send invoices occasionally with my my freelance production little sideline. With FreshBooks payment, your customer can pay straight from their invoice. Invoicing clients online will help you get paid an average of 11 days faster. See what invoices have been sent, viewed, and paid, as well as outstanding invoice total. So no more of this excuse. Oh, no, I didn't see that. Well, let's see. It says right here that you looked at it at 3:47 p.m. Last Thursday. It says right here on my screen. You saw it. Oh, okay. Well, see? No more excuses with FreshBooks. You can also brand and set recurring invoices, send automatic payment reminders, or set automatic late fees, too. And as a business owner, you know time is your most valuable asset. FreshBooks' new time tracking feature addresses common challenges. You can easily bill for time by client and by specific projects. Press play to track your time to the minute and quickly identify gaps with the all-new timeline. When it comes time to create an invoice, you know what you did and when you did it, and that's important. Stay connected to your clients and keep tabs on your business no matter where you are with the FreshBooks app. Track expenses by snapping a photo of your receipt or connecting your bank account and credit card to automatically import expenses daily so you can get rid of your shoebox. FreshBooks integrates with some of the apps you already use and some you'll be glad you found, like Stripe, Shopify, Gusto, Acuity Scheduling, and more. FreshBooks is adding new features and new improvements to their platform on a weekly basis. It's no wonder they were included in the Forbes Small Giants list for 2017. You can try it free for 30 days at FreshBooks.com/HamNation. Enter HamNation in the How Did You Hear About Us section. We thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode of Ham Nation. Now, if my freelance business would just take off, I could take advantage of FreshBooks as well. But, George, I'm just a simple man with simple needs. I'm a po' boy. Nobody loves me. I think I'm getting into a Queen song, and probably time to go and talk about your preamp stuff.
Yeah, nobody but your mother, Don, and she could be jiving too.
And yes, that's right, and is, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, I don't know if this is the right kind here. I've got chicken heads, but they're not the right color. So I don't know. Maybe I was thinking of going organic, Don, you know.
I think that's, well, you're there. You're there, dude. You're there. Thank you. Try the veal.
Oh. Where did my schematic go?
There. Too many moving parts.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about the preamp Bob has been showing us, and I hope my wife will answer that phone in there in the house.
If that's for me, I'm not here.
Yeah. So he showed us this week the preamp, well, with the equalization added to it, and we've seen another version of that one as well. But this is the original preamp that Bob presented to us, and that's what we're going to talk about. For simplicity's sake, it's a lot easier to explain this than, you know, the one with all the parts in it. So this is a straight preamp here, flat, no equalization on it. Let's get started. You remember a couple of weeks ago, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, recently, though, we talked about a triode tube and how it worked. Well, this 12AX7 is actually two triode tubes in one glass envelope. So that's what we've got here. It's a two-stage preamp using both stages of that tube. Down here at the bottom is the filaments. There are two filaments in that tube. They are 6.3 volts each. It's called a 12AX7. The 12 usually tells you the filament voltage. Well, if you wire them in series, you can put 12 volts to it, or wire them in parallel like this, and 6.3 volts is what you'd run them with. So you got options there. For simplicity, just 6 volts AC here. Over here is your microphone jack. That's where you put your microphone in. And I want to talk about that just a second. You know, a tube is a high impedance device like a FET or a field effect transistor. Most of our solid state stuff, though, is and transistor integrated circuits, what I mean. That's lower impedance, but tubes is a real high impedance on the input of it. So start out here. The first thing we've got is this 0.001 microfarad capacitor going to ground. Well, why is that there? Well, capacitors, you know, are frequency dependent, or they vary their effects with frequency. So the real small value capacitors, like this 0.001 here, those are going to be active up around RF frequencies, where a larger capacitor, say a 10 microfarad, that's going to have more effect down on a lower frequency. So we've got a 0.001 to ground. Well, that should tell us right there that this one is going to be shorting out any RF that happens to be coming back in that microphone cable to ground. So just a good way to stop it. Right up here above that and going over to the grid of the tube, we've got a 0.0047 microfarad capacitor. Now, if this was a solid state circuit, that capacitor would be a little bigger. It might be a 1 microfarad, 2 microfarad, you know, something in that range. But since it's high impedance on the tube input here, 0.0047 works out just right. Goes on into the grid. But you see, we've got a 1 meg resistor going to ground here. Well, if you remember when we were talking about the triode, you've got to have a negative bias voltage on that grid, or this tube's going to try to run wide open all the time. So that's how we're developing the negative bias right here. We've got this resistor that's holding that tube just a little bit negative here on the grid. So when our audio overcomes that negative voltage, then we can get current flowing from the cathode on up to the plate here. The cathode is grounded on the first stage here. So this stage is going to have a lot of gain to it. You come out of the plate on that. We go two different directions. We come down through a 100K resistor here. Follow that on out. And it goes to a 33K resistor out to our B plus, which at this point it was 150 volts. I think they may have modified that a little bit in the power supply, increased it slightly, but in the neighborhood of 150 volts. So voltage comes in here, goes on through 100K on up to the plate of the tube. There's also a 10 microfarad down here to ground. That's electrolytic capacitor. Remember I said the little larger capacitor, the lower the frequency. Well, what this is doing is stripping off or shorting to ground any ripple frequency, 60 cycles, 120 cycles, whatever. It's just taking that out of the equation. So we've got pure DC going on to the plate of the tube. You'll also notice here that there's another 100K here that goes on up from the power supply and goes to the plate of the other section of the tube. So both of the plates of these two sections of the tube here have the 100K ohm resistors for the power supply. Well, why would you put those 100K ohm resistors there? There's good reason for that. It's going to do two things. One is it is going to drop the plate voltage supply to the tube a little bit because it's resistance. It's going to drop the voltage. But the big reason that we've got them here is we don't want the audio that we've just spent our time amplifying here with the tube to run back into the power supply. So there's two ways that we prevent that. One is it won't go through that 100K ohm resistor, or if it does, it won't be a lot. And any audio that does get through, it's also going to go to ground right here with the 10 microfarad capacitor that's across our power supply. Okay, so on back to the plate here. Boy, it's hard doing this backwards. I could not be a weatherman. Anyway, we've got a capacitor here coming off the plate. It's a 0.02 microfarad. This is a coupling capacitor. The reason you've got that there is you don't want this DC plate voltage that's going up to the plate of the tube to come back down and go into the grid of the next section of the tube. 150 volts on that grid would not be a good thing. So we put that 0.02 microfarad capacitor there. All that's going to get through that is going to be audio. So blocks the DC, lets the audio on through. Then we've got a 50K ohm potentiometer here. And that acts like a load across the output of that tube there. We're putting a 50K ohm load on it. We've got the wiper of the potentiometer here. It goes over to the grid. Now, what this does, we can turn it up if we want more volume. That's going to send more of the signal from the first tube to the second one. Or turn it down, and it's going to send less. But it's roughly going to be a 50K ohm load across the plate of that tube all the time, because we're just tapping off a little bit to go over to our grid, and our grid is a high impedance. So that's our volume control. First stage of the tube here is the preamp, high gain. Second stage here would be more of a driver to drive the next stage of our transmitter here. And most of the high gain work is done here. And then this is more like a buffer or a driver, as I said. Okay, it's a little bit different. We don't need as much gain on this stage here because the first stage of the tube has already amplified it quite a bit. So we've got to have some way of reducing the gain on this element here. Well, one way is that we're just tapping off how much signal we want coming in here. But when we do that, that's going to, remember we got the resistor over here on this one going to ground for our bias. If we do that, it's going to be changing the bias on that tube, isn't it? Well, we don't want that to happen. So this tube is being biased over here on the cathode with a 1K ohm resistor, and that raises the potential of this cathode here a little bit above ground. And we've also got a 10 microfarad, 25 volt capacitor across that resistor. And, you know, if Bob is here, I would like to ask him to explain that right there. I know in a RF circuit, that capacitor value right there is going to be a lot smaller value, and it would be used to keep DC RF from developing across that. Bob, can you explain a little bit the purpose of this capacitor here in the preamp?
That actually helps give us a little bit more gain. Of course, we don't want that grounded. And right, if there's any kind of DC, then we don't want that to be showing up there either. So that's why we do that. And it really helps to do that on the second stage. You could do it on the first stage, but it's not well accepted there. We need to do it on the second stage, and it works great.
Okay, all right. Thanks for the explanation there. I wanted to be sure I was getting that correct and that clarified it just
you
a little
did.
Bit for me. Okay, so we go on to the second stage here. Of course, we're going to be emitting electrons off the cathode down here. The grid is going to kind of adjust that like a valve in an audio rate so that we're getting electrons flowing out the plate. Come on out that. We've already shown you that it goes back to the power supply through that 100K ohm resistor. That's how we're getting DC up to that plate so it can do some work. Then we've got a 0.047 microfarad capacitor right here. This is going to be another plate-blocking capacitor. What it's going to do, of course, is, that value is good for working at audio frequencies. It's going to let the audio pass through, but it's a capacitor. So DC can't go through that. So that's going to prevent DC from getting to the output here. Also, you see there's another 0.001 microfarad capacitor going to ground. What that is doing is the same thing as the one over here at the very first of the preamp. He's putting us some RFI protection in there Since we got wires coming in and out of this circuit, those are going to help keep that RFI from running back in your cables and getting into your preamp. Then we come on out to the output here, and of course, output on the tip and ground on the ring. So that's how the preamp works. It's a very simplistic circuit. You look there, there's not really many parts to that. It's kind of magic, the way that you can put these things together, put a little voltage in there, which turns out to be heat, and you got a preamp. So, Bob, and also W4IQN, you know, we appreciate him drawing this schematic out here. It makes it really simple to see how this works. And that's it. So now you know how
to
make a preamp. Not really much to it, is it?
No. I've tried to simplify it as much as I can. Hey, I got this hooked up real quick before we get on to Don. I think you're going to be able to hear this. I am talking in the transmitter, and you should hear just the transmitter. Now, here's where I'm talking about the right EQ. Here we'll put a lot of low end in it, roll off the treble. But here's the important part. Bring that back up. And here comes the treble. And boy, do we have treble. And I hope that frequency response comes through, because it's just cutting. And that's what we need. Now I can level it out, bring up the bass, bring that, and we can balance it so that it's kind of even. But personally, when you get on AM, you need to cut through, and that'll do it. And did you hear that okay, George? Is that demo okay?
Yeah, you could definitely tell it there. And the treble, with this latest circuit, you went in and tailored that, brought that frequency down a little bit to make it more useful in the ham bands. Is that what you did?
Yes, absolutely. We're not out there at 10 or 12K. We don't care about that. This is not a hi-fi situation. And then there's not a whole lot of bass boost, although if you want it, it's there. The bass boost is, but and a lot of guys think that's just cool. It might be cool, but I can't understand what you're saying. Whereas if you bring up the treble, listen to what that does. So there you go. And we got it all fired up, and that's the power supply, and it's all working. And I'll give you a quick shot. There's the transmitter, and I don't know if you can see that or not, but it's the transmitter's doing about a watt and a quarter, a watt and a half.
Wow.
So there you go. So thanks a lot, George. I really appreciate that, buddy. Go ahead, George. Take it.
Yeah, and thank you, Bob, for bringing that project forward, and everyone who's contributed to it, you know, to make it happen. It's going to be great having that kit available now. I'm probably going to have to order one of those myself, because I don't have the parts around here. I hear Gordo in there, and that reminds me of something. You know, last week I promised I was going to give away some of Gordo's books. We're not going to let him off on that. We're going to actually give away one. This question comes from the general class book. It's what license examinations may be administered when you're an accredited VE holding a general class operator's license. Could you administer a general and a technician, a general only, a technician only, or extra general and technician? That's kind of a tricky question there, isn't it? You'd think maybe if you got a general license, you could administer technicians and generals. That's not quite the case. And Austin Range, KD9HIX, says it's technician only. And that's correct, Austin. A lot of people got that one wrong. And I can see why. But, you know, Gordo had the answer right here in his book, and Austin's going to get his choice. I don't know what his license class is, but he can get his choice of Gordo's general, technician, or extra class study guide here. And do a little studying and upgrade if he is not already a general or an extra. Or he can pass it on to someone else and help them along the way. Thanks for making those books available, Gordo. They're a great resource, and you can tell mine is well flagged and used here, although I've had my license for a number of years now. You're never too old to have some great reference material to study with. Well, I got one more question here, and this will be for next week. We were talking about that preamp circuit again. Let me bring that back here. I want to know what would happen if this 0.047 microfarad right here shorted. That capacitor shorted. I want to know what would happen. We're going to do a little troubleshooting here. So if you think you know the answer to that, send me your answer, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you might win one of these MFJ-148RC remote control clocks. This is a fantastic clock for a ham shack. It's not remote control. It's radio controlled. It receives WWV. You can see it's synced up there. You got one side displays your local time zone. The other side you can put on UTC. It's got a built-in 10-minute ID timer. Great for your ham shack because, you know, there's a lot of times that, of course, you're going to want to know your local time, but you're going to want to know what UTC is as well. And you're not going to want to write your Central Standard Time on your log and submit that to Val because she's not going to appreciate that nearly as much as if you had put UTC on there like the ham world uses. So apologies there, Val. If I had had my clock here in front of me, I would have done that log better for you. But when we return the QSL cars to everybody, we're making sure that we've converted over to UTC time. But we wouldn't have had to done that conversion if we had been using one of these right here. HamNationContest@gmail.com. Tell me what happens when that capacitor right there shorts. Okay, it's time to, go back to Don. And Don, I've got some nice, really nice filters here I got at DX Engineering. What else have they got there?
I saw that. I watched your latest Amateur Logic, and you had those. Those are very slick. When I was there visiting DX Engineering, he just had all kinds of cool things. That was a couple of years ago. But, if you can't get up there, it's a ways from South Mississippi up there to Ohio. That's why you have the Book of Magic. You have the DX Engineering catalog. And you need this in your hand because it's almost time for field day. And if you've seen the new Spring-Summer 2017 catalog, then you know that this is your go-to source for everything field day. Just a taste of what DX Engineering offers to make field day better. An external speaker, a high-quality external speaker. That will help all of your visitors hear what's going on the radio, and maybe you'll get some more activity come over to check it out. DX Engineering carries external speakers from Phonema and Palstar, also radio-specific bass speakers from ICOM, Kenwood, and Yaesu. They're perfectly at home in a base station, yet portable enough for outdoor use in more robust field day setups. Of course, there's always the trusty DX Engineering communication speaker as well. It's a time-honored design that's simple, rugged, and portable. It also delivers excellent audio for its size and price. Now, of course, if you're operating, you know that a headset is going to be just the absolute, it's a necessity. And DX Engineering carries a wide variety of headsets specifically tailored to amateur radio applications. Like Heil's lightweight and versatile headsets let you stay comfortable for hours and hours of outdoor operating. They feature microphone elements that deliver excellent on-the-air clarity. The Heil headsets are padded for comfort, and they're built to survive in harsh operating environments. And, of course, they also have headsets from Prime. Prime radio gear is the same stuff used in professional surveillance and government operations. They are durable, lightweight, well-suited for field day and MCOM duty. And something else that you're going to need is a hand switch. I know there are a lot of guys out there that absolutely love foot switches. I'm more of a hand switch guy. I got one right here. I have a Heil hand switch right here in my hand. I love it. I use it all the time unless I'm operating Vox. But this is, for me, this is the best way to operate because it keeps it's more comfortable. You can sit back. Kind of lounge around the microphone here and just give it one of those when you want to talk to somebody. The hand switch is a smart way to operate in a noisy field day environment. It lets you keep your hands off the push-to-talk switch on your radio or the microphone. And also, it's a solution for operating where, well, you're in a noisy environment, and Vox-activated switches just are going to be impossible due to too much ambient noise. It's a pistol grip. It's compatible with virtually every bass radio when used with the proper adapters. And, of course, DX Engineering carries all the Heilsound hand switches plus all the related accessories. You want to get you this stuff because DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. Most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern are shipped the same day. Proven products, expert advice. DX Engineering helps you shrink the globe. Go online, grab your catalog, shop 24/7 online, 7 days a week, dxengineering.com/hamnation. They're great folks. We love them. Thank you, DX Engineering, for your support of Ham Nation. Why don't we go ahead and get caught up with the news of the week now from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2067, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, June 14th, 2017. During a torrent of monsoon rains that battered southwestern Sri Lanka in late May, hams responded to some greater challenges, namely how to get in there and respond to the government's requests for help.
The siege that left nearly 200 people dead and landslides and flooding presented few options. With communications down and roads impassable, the Sri Lankan Air Force was called upon to help by providing air rescue support, which included the airlift during challenging weather conditions of radio amateurs who could establish communications links. One of the hardest hit areas was remote Kalawana village, which had been cut off from Ratnapura, the base of one of the government's main coordinating centres. The president of the Radio Society of Sri Lanka, Jalila Lokeshwara, for Sierra 7 Juliet Lima, was among the two teams of hams flying in on the Mi-17 military helicopters. He worked with other hams establishing an HF link on 40 and 75 metres within 30 minutes of landing. Another link was set up on 2 metres. This enabled communication support for patients' transport for medical care, as well as other rescue flights and food drops. The Radio Society's website noted that it was the first time this kind of mission had been undertaken by hams in Sri Lanka. Emergency radio communications stayed intact until mobile phone services were operational again and the roads were open. By May 30th, the hams were safely on their way home. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jason Daniels, VK2LAW.
We close this week with a very personal story. Here's Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
On June 11, 2015, Amateur Radio Newsline lost its co-creator when Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, became a silent key. Beloved among his many friends, he helped take Amateur Radio Newsline to the global status it enjoys today. To say he is missed is an understatement. But with every newscast, we still feel and benefit from his talents and his contributions. A big part of Bill's legacy is our Young Ham of the Year Award, which he created in 1986 and which now bears his name. We'd like to think Bill would be especially proud to learn that our 2016 award recipient, Skylar Fennell, KD0WHB of Denver, Colorado, has just added another accomplishment to his already stellar amateur radio resume. The ARRL Foundation has just awarded Skylar a $2,500 Victor Poor W5SMM Memorial Scholarship. Congratulations, Skylar. You have made all of us proud, and you have honored the spirit of ham radio that was always so precious to Bill.
We'll continue Bill's legacy in August with the 2017 Young Ham of the Year presentation at the Huntsville Ham Fest. We hope you can join us there in person. If not, you can watch it live via the WD5KUB.com streaming webcast. And for the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Jason Daniels, VK2LAW, Stephen Kinford, N8WB, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
We have a big coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth strike zone later this week, and region 2661 wakes up and fires off a few beautiful eruptions before rotating to the sun's backside. Those stories and more in the news this week. The space weather's getting much more exciting this week. We have region 2661 that, when it came into Earth view on the sun's east limb, it had fired off a couple solar storms, and we thought, wow, this thing could be even a flare producer. But as it kind of rotated into the Earth strike zone, it kind of snoozed and fell kind of asleep. But now that it's rotating to the sun's west side, it's picking up again. Now it's firing off more solar storms. They're not Earth-directed, but it's giving us a beautiful display. Now, on top of that, we have this new coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth strike zone in probably about 3 days. We do expect to get some solar storming from that. On top of that, the region around it is really unstable, so it's been firing off a few slow solar storms that could actually extend the period of storming at Earth. So get ready for a very interesting weekend. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the fast wind from that coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in a few days. So NOAA is expecting minor storm conditions at high latitudes with about a 20 to 40% chance of a major storm. This is over the early part of the weekend. Things then should settle back down very kind of slowly because we do have a few minor eruptions that may extend the period of storming for a few days. At mid-latitudes, we're only expecting active conditions with about a 15% chance of a minor storm. And then again, things will settle down and things should be quieting back down at the beginning of the week. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is in the green when it comes to flares. Now, we were watching region 2661, but it has since rotated to the sun's backside, so we're left with region 2662, and it's really not much of a flare producer. However, we do have more activity on the Earth-facing disk right now, so that is keeping our solar flux in the low 70s. So you amateur radio operators, enjoy marginal propagation. It doesn't look like we're going to fall off the edge of the map here, but it's not going to be great propagation. At least it'll last for probably around the next 2 weeks, barring, of course, solar storms. So the space weather this week is looking to be pretty exciting. We do have that coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth strike zone here in the next few days, and that should give us some solar storming for at least the early part of the weekend. So your aurora photographers, you do have a chance to catch some more shots. I'm not sure if the show is going to be fantastic, but it should give us something, at least for maybe about 48 hours. Now, you GPS operators, you should be very happy because we no longer have any flare producers on the Earth-facing disk, so GPS and GNSS should be perfect. And you amateur radio operators, once we get through the early part of this weekend with this solar storm, things should calm back down and we'll be back to marginal conditions. At least it's not super bad, especially as we get closer to solar minimum. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
All right. Thank you, Dr. T. Good stuff. And excellent seeing you at Dayton this year. Just that was probably the highlight of my trip. Got a little bonus footage for you now that Dale sent along from the Rochester Amateur Radio Association. Let's take a look at that if we can.
K2YSO welcoming you to the Rochester Amateur Radio Association 2017 Hamfest. John Greco, KD2GTA, gave us a view of the Hamfest from the sky. Parking was at a premium. Some people had to park a mile or more away. There were many vendors to choose from, including the Antique Wireless Association, RW Antenna Store with lots of ham radio gear to choose from, Verno on the Roll Mobile Catering stopped by to satisfy even the hungriest of hams, free VE testing and free QSL card checking were offered. The weather was just perfect for vendors. High altitude balloon launch with APRS by Michael, KD2EAT, with help from John Greco, KD2GTA. Launch was at 10 o'clock a.m. At 11:27 a.m., or 87 minutes after launch, the balloon reached its max altitude of 111,500 feet.
Oh, wow.
It traveled 74.14 miles in the 2-hour, 23-minute flight. It landed midway between Canton and Pine City, New York at 12:23 p.m. and was found in a field at 12:39 p.m. The descent was a little slower than predicted, so it carried 10.24 miles south of the predicted landing spot. That was Rochester Amateur Radio Association 2017 HamFest. I hope you enjoyed the video and 7-3 from K2YSO.
Very interesting stuff. Thank you to you guys for sending that along. And Dale will be back in a future episode of Ham Nation with more of your videos and Show Me Your Shack stuff. Bob, over to you now.
Yeah, we need to get more videos to him also. So send them along so we can get more stuff happening. I forgot to put this up, by the way. This is the address of Antique Electronic Supply, tubesandmore.com. And the crystals are there, tubes. We'll be back and bring you more things next week, things that will make it happen. And thanks, George. That was great. I appreciate you doing that very much. Let's go see what Amanda's got. She's been keeping track on all of us in the chat room. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Bob. And, boy, we got some good questions tonight. First of all, I happen to see part of Bob's response on this question, and I found this amazing. Pierre KM3WSJ says, I have a question for the guys. If I build a 2-meter 440 antenna and slide PVC over it to hide it, will it impede the signal? And I said, well, what kind of antenna are you talking about? And he said, something like a J-pole. And I saw Bob's response say, microwave the PVC. Now, was that a reply to this question?
It's a reply to anything with PVC. Put it in a microwave oven. Now, if it's real big, long pieces, I don't know what to do. Personally?
Hey, Bob, your mic's really low on the audio. Did you?
Well, here, I'll get it over the other side.
There we go.
That'll probably help you a little bit. The whole thing about PVC is if you put it in a microwave oven, it'll take care of it. But I've built a lot of antennas with PVC. George, I bet you have had some experience with that. I know Gordo has. Let's see. First of all, Gordo, are you still there?
Oh, yeah. Still here. And we've tried a lot of different PVC antennas, especially for VHF as well as HF. No problems. Way up at 10 gigahertz, yeah, that's another deal. And Bob, if I may, Cumberland Valley, Pennsylvania, this Saturday is having a ham fest, maybe building antennas. Kids Day is this Saturday. So everybody bring kids out to play ham radio. And this Saturday, Bear Lake, Utah, is a Wyoming, Montana, Utah get together. And they too will probably be building maybe some PVC antennas. So have at it. PVC should not be a problem up to maybe 2 or 3 gigs. Over.
Yeah, that's it. Hope that answered it for you, Amanda.
Absolutely. And the second part of the question, will PVC impede the signal of the 2-meter antenna?
No.
No, I don't think so. Uh-uh.
Okay, good to know. This is my next question, Bob. Adam, 80AM, cool call sign, by the way, Adam, that you got that. He says, I've been missing some of the episodes that contain the pine board experiments. Can you give me a final cost of what it's going to cost to purchase everything to build this? Do you have that?
I don't have, but they're working on that. As I said, keep track, AES, Antique Electronic Supply. They're working on that right now. They're putting all the pieces and parts together. I think they've got the field strength meter finished. Now they're working on the power supply and then the preamp. And Just pay attention to the website. Check it each day, ohiosound.com, down at the bottom, the pine board section. But we'll keep you posted here. I would assume that next week we'll have all of the prices and stuff from AES, okay?
Awesome. Everyone's excited to find that out. Oh, and Chris, KD8YVJ wanted to correct you, Gordo. Kids Day is on Sunday. So if you're out there with your dad, get on the radio with them. Kids Day goes both ways.
Next question. Yep. Okay. I can't even read my own writing, Amanda. Kids Day, Sunday, the 18th. Thank you for correcting me. But you can get a head start on Saturday anyway.
Yeah. And Chris is a kid, so he would know. Chris is a kid. He would know.
And you know what? If you're a kid and you get on Saturday, someone's still going to talk to you. But the real day, Sunday. And I'm not sure it's really a contest, but if you want to find out more information about it, just Google ARRL Kids Day and you can find everything you need to know. Next question. I'm going to send this over to Don first, see if he knows. Some people were discussing, why does Bob use purple? What do you think it is, Don? Why do you think he uses purple?
Well, purple is a royal color, for one thing. He looks dashing in it. And I think it may be his favorite color, and I know that it is the corporate colors of Heil Sound. Is that right, Dr. Bob?
Nope.
No?
Nobody ever figures it out. There is a very distinct reason. I mean, 100% right on, but nobody's ever guessed it.
Tell us. Yeah, there you go.
I
think he should put the answer up for auction on eBay. I thought I knew the answer, but now I'm not going to say why, because I'm going to keep it a mystery with everyone else. I think he's let it slip before you guys. So
yeah, I feel like Bob's told us before.
I think so.
I've heard something about this.
And if you have the right amount of money, I might tell you myself. Everyone, chat room.
It's a lot what my wonderful sweet wife and boss Sarah says a lot. You don't listen close enough.
There you go. You guys, that's all I have. I didn't get any upgrades or anything, but I'm so looking forward to Field Day. I hope we're going to start talking about it next week. My favorite time of the year, even if with those mosquitoes. So, all right, that's all I have. Let's go over some nets. D-Star 14 Charlie, you know where to find it. Echolink, Dewdrop In. $71.92 for a 40-meter net and $14,268 for the 20-meter net. Go find them, everyone. Get on there. Work the bands. Have some fun this evening if you don't have any storms in your area. That's all I got. Back to you, Bob.
Okay. Well, it's been a lot of fun as usual. And we now know how a 12AX7 works. See? That's cool. All right. Been with me for 61 years, I guess. So, love it. Love all you guys and gals, and we'll see you back here next week. Get your soldering irons ready and join us in all this fracas of building things. That's the cool part. So we'll talk to you next week right here on Ham Nation. Thank you, Leo Laporte, for the Twit Network time, and Brian, always, for your time and talent. And we'll talk next week. Bye-bye for now. This is K9EID.